Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages. It is yours truly, the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, welcoming you to the F4L headquarters. You know, what's funny is I had already set up to do this show today, and I literally just got to set it up literally right now. Today I have a very busy day, as not only, am I going to be doing this show for you guys here now and chat with you guys and doing some reviews and so forth. I am also, as we speak, going to be uploading and putting up the all-new wrestling show for tonight on my YouTube wrestling show, Icons of the F4L, and tonight's special event is called the Spring Fling, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. So be looking for that on my YouTube channel at the conclusion of this show. That'll be starting to go up there. We have some great matches for you guys tonight on there and whatnot. And just so people know, I had planned on doing a live face-to-face interview for this yesterday. Unfortunately, there was some technical difficulties, and I was unable to do that with my co-host on Tuesday nights. JoJo, the model Sebastian. My apologies to him. I don't know what happened there. We had some issues with the Zoom and so forth. And it was my first time attempting to do like, this podcast on the Zoom. But going forward, I'm thinking, why can't I do a Zoom while I record this show if I have a guest? So we're going to look into that maybe later. Maybe we'll have to find someone who is going to be willing to do both. Do a Zoom and do this podcast at the same time. That'd be interesting, huh? All right, cool. So tonight's docket, I don't have a guest scheduled for tonight, and I did that on purpose because I have quite a bit of things to talk about and disclose and whatnot. And by the way, I apologize because this show might turn into like one of those AMSR videos. My wife just made a delicious chicken and rice dish for dinner just a moment ago. So I have that going. I got my tea brewed thanks to Brutalities. Tonight's tea of choice was a newer flavor. Tell you what it is in a second. I just put it down, didn't I? Because I'm real smart, folks, let me tell you. One second, folks. So this is the this one here is the Wendigo, the Wanderers, I believe it's called Lavendar. Wendigo the Lavendars. It's really cool, actually. It's black tea, lavender, orange, blue corn flowers. Raspberry leaves, blueberries, natural bergamot, vanilla, blueberry, and cream flavors all in this one tea right here. And it's a really good flavor. I had some the other night just to, do some writing and so forth. I was doing some reading. I had hoped to finish the book that I'm reading by Stephen King right now, more recent books called Later. I'm almost done with it. I probably have maybe a chapter or two left to go. And it's a great book, by the way. It might be because of the fact that it's kind of like if you were to take the Sixth Sense and put it in book form in Stephen King lingo and mix it all together. In M. Night Shyamalan being my favorite director of all time, Stephen King being one of my writing influences, I guess it's a pretty good mix, I suppose, right? It's not anywhere close to being the Sixth Sense, even though in the book it kind of references it in parts without officially saying it. If you're familiar with the Sixth Sense, which is my second favorite movie of all time. By the way, I have to correct myself. The other day, we had our guests on the show, the Mina Boys, Henry and Hiroo Mina. And they had asked me what my favorite movie or favorite horror movie was. And I don't know why I spaced for a second, but to answer that question, my two favorite movies of all time currently are, I mean, I have multiple movies I have a lot of respect for, I enjoy, but my favorite all-time movies are Real Steel with Ewan McGregor. I'm sorry, Ewan McGregor. Hugh Jackman and Max. Max, I'm okay. That's his name in the movie. It was Hugh Jackman and oh goodness, that's terrible. I can't remember the young guy's name, but it was a great movie. I loved it. It was that's a Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie with Hugh Jackman, Real Steel, and that's probably going to come to me during the. It's probably going to come back to me during this podcast with his name is of the young man, who is co-hosting with Hugh Jackman in that film. And my second favorite film of all time is The Sixth Sense. And for a long time, that was my favorite movie of all time. It was wonderfully directed. It was wonderfully portrayed. It was great performances by everyone. I believed everything. I'm going to go over it a little bit because I'm going to be doing a lot of reviews and so forth today on the show. And part of my process of seeing what a good film is versus a not so good film would be, casting is first of all, storyline is important. Does it make sense? I call that the believability factor. And then finally, does it resonate some kind of a feeling out of me? And the answer to that is the Sixth Sense did all of those things. And that's why I really enjoyed that film. It was wonderfully directed. I love a lot. I really have a lot of respect for M. Night Shyamalan. And I know a lot of people give him a lot of hard times because he saw the success the Sixth Sense did with that twist at the end. I don't care who you are. I'm really good about figuring out what's going to happen in a movie before it does. And by the way, I knew I'd remember halfway into this episode. Dakota Goyo was the name of the kid who played his son. Hugh Jackman, Dakota Goyo, the new Canadian phenom, as I called him for a little while. Evelyn Lilly was in that as well, and several other people here and there. A lot of people you probably never heard of, but it was a good movie. It was a really good movie. I really enjoyed Real Steel. But when you talk about The Sixth Sense, you have a lot of people who, I mean, that was Haley Joel Osment's Oscar-nominated involved in this film. Toni Collette, back then I knew she was going to be destined for a lot of great stuff, and I'm glad to see that she's not only still working, she still brings a element of greatness to everything she's involved in, and that's Toni Collette. Sixth Sense, she plays Haley Joel Osment's mother in The Sixth Sense, and it's believable portrayal. And then just from there, just Toni Collette seems to be all over the place as far as her range goes. She did, like I said, she did that movie wonderfully. I mean, if I was going to do my top 10 or top few, I don't really believe in top, tens. If it's not a 4, then it's a 14, but... And some other point where I'll do the 14 of Vengeance again, where I give you 14 of the top favorites of all time. But if I was going to take, roles that I really enjoyed Toni Collette in above others, of course, The Sixth Sense would be ranked number one, no matter what it was. I mean, in no particular order, my favorite performances are hers that shows off her talents would be The Sixth Sense, one, as I just said. Little Miss Sunshine, she played, again, a mother of the Olive character, who was the star of the movie. That was Abigail Breslin, who did an amazing job. Surrounded by Greg Kinnear, as well as Alan Arkin, Paul Dano, and Steve Carell. I mean, what a cast that is. Anyway, but Toni Collette was in there, and she held her own against all of these people. Another one of my favorite Toni Collette projects TV shows was United States of Tara. What a great show that is on Showtime. She plays a woman who has multiple personality disorder. And not only does she show what that is, she goes into these characters and shows just the various different ranges she has as an actress. And that's not easy to pull off. That's like three roles right there. But that movie right there was above and beyond. I could mention, About a Boy was a great film with Toni Collette playing a minor role opposite of Hugh Jackman isn't this terrible? Oh my goodness, that's crazy. You know, I don't like looking up things because I usually know things off the top of my head, especially when I have a lot of respect for them. But About a Boy was the original British movie I'm talking about, not their American remake. Toni Collette plays the mother again of the titular, the character who is the boy, of course. And his name in the movie is Marcus. I was about to look it up and it came to me. It doesn't take you too long. Nicholas Holt's his name. You might not remember him from that role, but that was one of his first like really blowing up roles that I saw him in. And he is now, you probably know him now as like, Beast from the X-Men movies, or maybe you know him from other various different roles he's done since then. Now, you know, he's very much matured in his age. Back then he had the moppy hair and I think the bowl cut was kind of a thing in the 90s. And he was there and he was in, he did a couple of, he's doing that movie with Ellie Fanning where he plays the prince. I think it's called The Great or something like that. My wife started watching it when she was doing her Sunday showcase thing where she try a new show on Sundays. It's me and my wife, I'm about to eat some more of her rice. Delightful. Because it's quick and easy, that's why. So there's that. All right. So, but yeah, The Sixth Sense is my second favorite film of all time, the moral of that story. That was also the year I found out never to bet on the Oscars. I don't even gamble, and sometimes I don't gamble because I don't like to lose, and I was so sure because of how wonderfully made The Sixth Sense was, and I saw all the other movies it was against that year, and I thought for sure The Sixth Sense was a shoe-in across the board, and of course it lost almost everything. Best Supporting Actor went to Michael Caine, Sir Michael Caine now. And it's not like I have anything against Michael Caine. I think Michael Caine is a phenomenal actor as well, and a legend at that. But Joel Osment's performance in The Sixth Sense was so important, I guess, is one thing to say. But not only important, but also it was vital to the success of the film. Because for me, if I can't buy the character, if I can't buy the person casted in the role, I can't get past that for the rest of the film. And that's one of the, things I often see in a lot of these films is if a character is miscasted or if someone's there who shouldn't be there. And sometimes it has nothing to do with the role, but if there's an actor I'm not particularly fond of, like I'm not fond of a lot of their work, sometimes that hurts the chance of me seeing the film. And sometimes I might miss out on a really great performance. So for the most part, I do try to get everything in, but there are some movies just if I see, a person's name in the cast or in the credits, and I know I'm not going to like that person's performance, then I can't really, sit through a film within the hopes that it might be good. True story. If The Sixth Sense and The Real Steel are my favorite films of all time, the worst film I've ever seen in my life, the one that I really was like pulling teeth. And the only thing that saved me from watching the entire movie was the fact that I worked in a movie theater and I saw it for free. And I kept on telling myself, you didn't pay for this. But the reason why I continued watching it is so that, and this is something I did when I worked at the theater, and as well as before that, I worked at Blockbuster. I did the same thing there, where I would tell people, listen, this movie's not good, and this is why. And I would help people save their money, because there's nothing, I mean, movies at that time were like $10.50 at night, or $21.50 at night at the movie theater. And I was going back to, you know, quite a few years ago. And the movie was called Bucky Larson, by the way. Oh, my gosh. It starred Nick Swardson, who is a friend of Adam Sandler. And, of course, this is a Happy Madison production. It was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life. I'm not overly fond of Nick Swardson to begin with. So I guess I really shouldn't have been surprised that a movie with him as the starring role wasn't going to be as good as it was. And I have nothing against Happy Madison. They do some fantastic work. And I'm sure there's Nick Swardson fans out there who love his work. I am not one of them. I'm sorry. It's just his comedy style is not something I enjoy. I don't even know what that comedy style is. It doesn't have a name or any kind of a thing attached to it. Of course, he comes from SNL. Of course, he's, you know, accompanied by all these other people. And if he's in a movie like a supporting background character, maybe like in Grown Ups 2, like he was in there, and I guess he was there to replace Rob Schneider's character, I'm going to tell you, I would have much rather Rob Schneider in that role than Nick Swardson. I mean, Rob Schneider was in the first Grown Ups film. I was fortunate enough to be an extra in both, one and two Grown Ups that were filmed in my area. But that's beside the point. But Nick Swardson, just for me, is just, there's no style that is his. That's, you can't really label him as a slapstick comedy guy because, I mean, there's so many other people that he's accompanied by. In a movie like Grown Ups 2, you're really able to hide a lot of the flaws he had as an actor because he's surrounded by so many talented people that can cover that up. You have Adam Sandler at the helm, who has proven not only can he do acting, but he can also be serious at times as well. But I mean, this in Grown Ups, it was clearly a comedy, but you know, he's surrounded by Adam Sandler, Kevin James, Chris Rock, David Spade. And just that crew alone already makes up for the flaws in Nick Swardson because already you have a winning team. I feel like the Grown Ups films is basically if you were to make an Expendables movie of SNL characters or the greatest SNL cast members, I feel like Grown Ups would be that movie. It's good that he has so many people that he can just, you know, hey, I need such and such. And people are, you know, willing to work with him and willing to help him out. And again, he can do comedy as well as he can do drama. So, you know, good for him. But that's here or there. So that was the answer to the question. The worst film I've ever seen was Bucky Larson, and he, adult film star, I think was the full title, but it was the worst film I've ever seen in my life. And if I had to pay money for that film, I would have been upset, which is why I told people not to see it when they came to the theater. And that's just me being honest. Sorry, Nick Swardson fans. But that being said, you know, well, let's talk about current day, you know, stuff right now. I wanted to do a couple deep dives. And one of the things that I really wanted to do a deep dive of is The Conners, the TV show. I guess we'll start with TV. The Conners, of course, is I would almost want to say a spawning of Roseanne, which is originally what it was going to be. Then I would guess there was a fallout with Roseanne Barr, I think her name is now. I don't know what her last name is anymore. Sorry, folks, but I want to say, first of all, I am a fan of Roseanne in general, and I know that there may be people out there who might not think very fondly of her. I think a lot of that has to do with this culture we have where someone hears part of something and it can get blown up out of proportion. But I think it's important, as before I start going into a deep dive of the Conners, to really reflect and really highlight the fact that if it wasn't for Roseanne Barr in general, across the board, the show wouldn't be as iconic as it is. In the 80s and the 90s, when Roseanne was, you know, at the helm, and this was all Roseanne, and we saw these characters growing, not just the characters, but the actors portraying them, growing as both actors, performers, as well as individuals. Roseanne was one of those first shows that really pushed the envelope on a lot of different subjects that a lot of other shows at the time would be taboo, if you would. A lot of things would not go over well. Roseanne was really developmental in really pushing the envelope and trying to raise awareness to various different things and subjects that are current day issues or relevant topics. Roseanne battled, you know, was really one of the first TV shows to kind of break down the barriers of the LGBTQ community. If it wasn't for, I mean, she was one of those first shows that, you know, really highlighted that. She took on child abuse in the early episodes. I had Michael Fishman on as one of my guests on this show. Actually, he was my very first guest on the show. Fun fact. Of course, Michael Fishman plays DJ Conner on the show, and he grew up with that character. And you really, I mean, even though there was a person who played him, DJ right before Michael Fishman took over, let's all agree that Michael Fishman is, in fact, DJ Conner for life. As long as the DJ character is a thing, then Michael Fishman needs to play DJ Conner. But that being said, he talked about how important that role was to him to bring this awareness. And he was so young at that age. And just the things that Roseanne did when she was on the show, and it was Roseanne, really opened the door for all of other shows to kind of borrow and kind of, you know, emulate or try to touch upon. I honestly have to say a lot of people will, you know, talk about Ellen and being the first person to, you know, to come out on one of her TV shows. But I think if you were to look at the time frame of when Ellen came out of the closet, so to speak, when she told people she was gay officially on her show, and this was a show that was made for the sweep week, and this was to get the ratings in. I think if you were to look at the timelines, I think you'd find out that Roseanne, before Ellen did that, already tackled that subject and already, you know, kind of pulled back the curtain and said, this is okay. That's something that is revolutionary. So I think it's important before we start, before, you know, while I continue into talking about strictly the Conners current day, what it is, to reflect upon and really, you know, say and have to say, if it wasn't for the Roseanne character and the characters portrayed and the storylines that were given way back in the day, television itself, sitcoms themselves wouldn't be where they are today, let alone everything else. But I think it's due to the fact that her influence and always fighting a fight, so to speak, and always fighting for, you know, accept, you know, getting acceptance out there, getting it out there that, you know, this is the way it should be. And her often butting heads with whoever to make those things happen. So I guess before we go in, as I continue, I'm going to be, you know, that is going to, the last thing I say is the fact that if it wasn't for, you know, the work that Roseanne did to start the ball rolling, I think it's fair to say that the Conners might not be where they are, even though it is kind of, it's its own thing. And I agree with that. So now I'm going to get, now that I've done that, I'm going to go into a deep dive of the Conners current as we know it. So when I talked about how I look at films, I look at television the same way. And here's how I do television. If there's a show that is new or something I want to get used to, I'll watch the first episode ever made. And I'll know within the first 15 minutes of this episode if I'm going to like this, if it's going to be a continued, or if I need to go one more episode to find out myself. And the Conners, that was a given. It was almost right away. It was going to be, I can't wait to see what's going to happen next. you have so many diverse characters, so many different plot lines in every single episode. So modern and sympathetic, but putting the comedy approach to it, because we all have these, you know, when the Connors was really starting, unfortunately, the virus hit and the world stopped. And usually, you know, on this show, I don't talk about, you know, that virus and, you know, the negatives of the world, because it's not right for all the good things. And the Connors is a really good example of this, because the Connors first, you know, when it was on its own, and we're talking about episode one of Strictly the Connors, they right away dealt with the topic of death right off the bat. They did it in the classic Connor way, where it was, you know, done in a serious manner. People did an amazing job with performance ranging, but also kept that comically lighthearted feeling that people are used to. So it blended everyone together, both past and present, and hopefully future fans of the show. So in the Connors, I mean, it's safe to say that Sarah Gilbert's portrayal of Darlene really is the modern day Roseanne. I think if you were to watch the show, it's kind of there. Let's talk about Darlene's character, Sarah Gilbert's character, first of all. This is a character, this woman, who we're going to talk about, you know, the character of Darlene's, her, you know, arc. She's had these, you know, questionable relationships in her life. She comes back to is in the Connor. She's got two kids. Mark, played by the incomparable Ames McNamara, as well as a very almost a mini her kind of a character named, her name on the show is, oh boy, tell me, Emily Kinney plays her and does it performatively well. And this is going to be another one of those things. I don't like looking things up. And a lot of people wonder, do I take notes or read something when I do these shows? And the answer is no, I don't do notes or I don't read off anything when I'm doing this show. And the same thing goes for when I'm doing interviews and stuff. People say, hey, do you write out your questions ahead of time? And no, I don't, is the answer to that as well. Because I run this podcast like I run when I used to do the fitness center, which was a talk show I did in the ring when I wrestled. And of course, that is done live with no, you know, background. And I knew it was only going to come to a minute. It was Harris is her name. Harris is the name of Darlene's oldest daughter. And of course, Ames McNamara, as I covered, plays Mark. Harris is who Darlene was growing up in the early days. She's, you know, she's semi against authority. She's already been through the ringer. Both her and her brother have already apparently been part of this, you know, relationship up and down, but played by, you know, between Darlene, again, played by Sarah Gilbert. And of course, if you guys don't know, they're the kids of Johnny Galecki's character. David is his name on the show. Anyone who doesn't know who David is, just stop. Now, he, of course, Johnny Galecki would go on to probably be, most people probably know him more from Big Bang Theory or something like that. But let's face it, he will, people who grew up watching him and Darlene in their early days probably will always say, hey, look, there's a guy from Big Bang Theory. That's David. And that's probably what's going to happen, whatnot. But I want to talk about some of the other people. I already talked about Michael Fishman. He brings back, he's always going to be forever DJ. What he brings to the table is he's married and he has a daughter, and it's a mixed marriage. So of course, Michael Fishman is a Connor, who they're the, you know, football loving Chicago natives from Lanford County. So, you know, there's that, and he's married to an African-American young lady played by Maya Lynn Robinson. And she's a soldier, and she's a military veteran, and apparently she's on tour, I guess, because I haven't seen her on the show in quite some time. And I apologize if I missed something in there somewhere. But for the most part, anytime Michael Fishman's character or DJ is there, it's usually the Heat himself and his daughter, of course, played by Jaden Ray. Of course, her name is Mary on the show. Of course, Mary, you know, being the daughter of Michael Fishman. And it's a great performance, the dynamic there. And Michael Fishman's also stepped up and became a director on several of the episodes. And because of his passion for humans and other people and feelings and mental health and so many various different things he strongly believes in, that the cast clearly also has feelings for, they really let him take the reins. And that's really shown in each of those episodes that he's directed, but it's also shown throughout the entire series as a whole, how much faith each person has within it. So we already talked about Darlene being played by Sarah Gilbert to perfection. She's always going to be this sarcastic, but loving and funny individual. Now, I'm going to tell you, I look at kind of life kind of like Sarah Gilbert. I am positive, even though she's more of like the pessimism thing. Like she likes the glass is half empty with her. But I look at it like the half glass is half full myself. But as far as when it comes to of looking at things in a sarcastic manner, making a joke here and there, how to deal, because that's ultimately how you can tell she deals with feelings, is she adverts to what I call positive sarcasm, where she relies on that comedy to survive through the hardest of areas. Lacey Gordson, who came back as Becky, she of course played Becky way back in the day too. And Lacey, we want to talk about a person who's portraying someone who's dealing with substance issues. Again, we're talking about modern day things that people deal with. This show, The Conners, since it's been relaunched and everything else in itself, has battled things from what it's like to grow up in a middle class, well, not even a middle class, but a lower class family lifestyle. Well, these guys are basically just barely hanging on. They talk about what it's like to deal with modern day society. They've dealt with politics. They've dealt with poverty. They've dealt with drugs addiction. They've dealt with sexual identity. They've dealt with bullying. They've done all of these arcs by these amazing acting jobs by all of these amazing people. John Goodman still is Dan Connor. What a job. And in the show, if you watch it, you can, as a father myself, I find myself really looking at John Goodman's character when it comes to these things going on. He's, of course, you know, the father on, he is the connection as well as the other veteran actors are. Fishman and Gilbert and Gorson and Laurie Metcalf. Oh my God. Just the element of legendary status that these guys have already established. And then when you mix that with the current day, you know, new mixings with the, you know, the Jaden Rays, the Emmy Kennys, the Ames McNamara, Jay Ferguson does an amazing job. You bring in Katie Sagal from one of the other greatest shows of all time for sitcoms, Married with Children. Katie Sagal is part of a lot of historical, long-running television shows, sitcoms, comedy, action. I mean, what a range there. You got Married with Children. You got the Sons of Anarchy. You got Modern Family. Wait, no, you don't have Modern Family. But you do have all the other things I just mentioned. You have Sons of Anarchy, of Married with Children. Katie Sagal is above all, has all of that, and iconic in all of them. I'm surprised that she wasn't in Modern Family, because that's where her on-screen husband, Ed O'Neill, was from Married with Children. But she blends well with the Connors. It just fits well. Alexandria Bellas, she is Darlene's boss at this plant. And Darlene, of course, is, you know, like her mother, worked in a factory. Darlene's now a manager of one. And above her is Alexandria Billings, who is a transgender actress. What a job. And breaking down that barrier again is what this show does. And just the performances by these amazing people. I mean, Laurie Metcalf. I got to say, Laurie Metcalf's character is, she portrays the crazy aunt. And boy, does she nail it. Her daughter is on Young Sheldon. I don't know if you guys know that. What a job she does. Just all around, this, when it comes to looking at the elements, what success, what a successful show needs to be, you got the cast check. Any one of these actors can go live anytime. And they've done live shows this season, and I hope they do some more. Tremendous range on everybody. No one's, there's nothing off limits that this family cannot tackle. They've had ups and downs and lefts and rights. You could take a couple days or a couple weeks and be behind and then just get sucked into the story arc and just get caught up. And you can't just watch one. If you have a Hulu thing, which is something I usually have to do because I don't always have time to watch it when it's live. But when I watch it on Hulu, I can just sit there and just enjoy it without the commercials, of course, which is nice. But, you know, just the various different things that they tackle, they show that, you know, we are as a family, we, you know, life isn't always fair, but boy, do they pull together and boy, is it heartfelt. It is a great show, great cast. Storylines are believable because they're relatable and they're done in a comical way. And that's what we need in society. Not this, we have way too many of these reality TV shows that no one believes is real. Then you have a show that is a sitcom that's supposed to be fake that makes more sense than these reality TV shows. Explain that to me. And there's that. That's what I get to say about that. But The Conners is by far, I think, the most, is a legendary TV show. And it, I hope, and I haven't really looked into it yet, and I'm almost afraid to, because it's a such a great show with such an arc. I think I heard that they're going to have a spinoff or something, and I hope that happens. In all honesty, you could take any one of these, you know, groups of characters, the Sarah Gilberts, and the, you know, you could take Darlene's character and her family. You could take her kids, for that matter. Emily Kinney could probably run a show with herself and the guy who plays her husband, or, well, not her husband yet, but the guy who's, you know, she's trying to marry. Very interesting. Just the supporting cast also goes along with these other people. Jay Ferguson, I'm told, I mean, I think that Michael Fishman said on the show too, is just, seems like a very nice guy, and he's a hard worker, and I think he adds the heart to The Conners. Jay Ferguson is, and he's just a guy you feel, you know, belongs with them, and he also is the anchor to kind of brings the heartfelt stuff. He's the father to the kids that they need. And he is also the reality that Darlene and the rest of them needed as well. John Goodman, my goodness, just having to sit and watch all these amazing people and to anchor it all together. You got to know that he's got to be someone who he brings it every time. And just you feel every one of his own emotions, the ups and the downs. And then not to mention, let's not forget in the storyline mode, in the storyline, we got to remember he lost his wife who he was married with for many years. And now he's remarried to Katie Sagal. I want you to think of this one now. Dan, his wife, Roseanne, passed away. And now he's married to Peggy Bundy. Think about that one now, folks. Or Gemma Teller, either one you want to look at. And that's who he has to compare with for that element of that. Okay, so just, yeah, that's just something I think is amazing. When the Katie Sagal came in, I'm like, this is iconic to have these two. So one second, folks, as I turn a light on, it is getting dark, and I do not sit in the dark. Allow me to shed some light on the subject of life. That was me being punny. Sorry. All right. So that was my take on The Conners. Just, it's a fantastic show, wonderfully written, and it doesn't matter who's directing the episode. Everyone's fingerprints are on it, and the face that the rest of the cast, I don't know why I just did the Daffy Duck with that. The faith that the rest of the cast has in people like Fishman and Gilbert and all the other people who have taken the director's chair just shows that they have range and shows how professional they are. So I hope the Connors lives forever, honestly. I think they're all tremendous at what they do, and I hope they all continue, you know, for seasons to come, because this is the kind of shows we need today. All right. That's a TV show I've been watching. I haven't really put together a thing for it yet, but I just started watching a show off HBO Max. Apparently it's on HBO. Adam Ruins Everything. I know a lot of people like, well, I've heard of that and whatnot. And you know what? I was a big fan of Penn and Teller's BS that they had off Showtime. Penn and Teller are two comedians from Las Vegas, probably most known, where they do magic acts and so forth. Penn is obviously the talker, and Teller is known – no. Yeah, Penn is obviously the talker of the two, and Teller is silent. I mean, silent. He doesn't talk. And that's kind of the ongoing joke between Penn and Teller. And the reason I like the show Penn and Teller did called BS is because I'm someone who likes reality and doesn't like nonsense. And they have done episodes that has kind of debunked a lot of various different things, which I'm not overly fond of when people take strands of something and just try to make it reality. Like myself in high school, I did a research paper on various different things we were learning in school. And I learned about the things that about the real Christopher Columbus. And as controversial as this is and whatever, I said back then in the paper I did a research paper about him, a deep dive. And I said, why are we celebrating Christopher Columbus? He is not someone who should be celebrated. He didn't find America. He, in fact, found it by accident. He didn't even know America was a thing because he called it something else. He thought it was another country. And then as time goes on, the books and the research, you find out that he was not a nice man. He practically wiped out the Native American population. He enslaved people. He was responsible for destroying cultures and lives. And if they didn't conform the way he wanted them to, he just wiped them out. This is the real story of Christopher Columbus, folks. And this is why our family, we don't celebrate Columbus Day, because there's no different, because what Columbus is actually the first documented case of genocide. But unlike other people who do the same thing, we, you know, are quick to say we don't like Adolf Hitler and all these other people. But in fact, Christopher Columbus, if you look at what he did practically the same things as Adolf Hitler. We don't condone any of these things. And I don't care if it's someone who's we've read about in textbooks that we've adored for years or not. Let's call a spade a spade. And to this day, I bet you kids are still learning about how great Christopher Columbus is. Folks, I urge you to look up the real Christopher Columbus stories. Because if you do, you'll find out quickly he is not someone you should be celebrating. And I'm sorry if that makes people upset. And by the way, the only people who celebrate Columbus Day is Americans. And I am embarrassed for such a thing. So I do not take part in Columbus Day, nor does my family, my wife or my kids, because they know the reality. And I won't lie to my kids. So there you go. Now, that being said, but Adam Ruins Everything is now a new, it's kind of like the current day Penn and Teller's BS. By the way, I don't know if it still is. It was available on Hulu BS. And Penn and Teller is on BS. And the Adam Ruins Everything is actually over on HBO Max. So those people are HBO Max people or, you know, wherever it's on. Adam basically does the same thing as Penn and Teller. He's one guy, and he kind of has this kind of tongue-in-cheek thing where he kind of pops up out of everywhere. He comes across as kind of like an arrogant know-it-all, but I think what's good about it is he doesn't mean to be that way, and he's just trying to make sure people know certain things. He calls it ruining whatever it is that he's debunking, and what he does is exactly what Penn and Teller did, and that's kind of raise awareness to things that may or may not be accurate. And I want to say there was also an episode where he even, you know, took back a lot of the things after he did research after that. If anything he found, and they have an extensive research team that puts those together, and he's just the guy on the screen that tells it all. But what he has done is he even did an episode where he showed that, hey, flaws happen, humans happen. And he, you know, admitted that he was wrong in some of the episodes, which makes it again reality, which makes it again believable, which makes it, you know, a smart viewing. So Adam Ruins Everything is a great show, in my opinion, as well. I haven't watched a lot of it. I'm not prepared to give you a full thesis on it yet, but I can say that I am enjoying that because I enjoy learning things once in a while instead of just watching that when I get to watch television. That's another rare thing I get to do. The Walking Dead is coming to an end soon. And I am planning on watching the very last episode, and I'll have a deep dive in that as well. Not to, you know, The Walking Dead was part of pop culture, and that was part of the things where you either watch Sons of Anarchy, you watch The Walking Dead. You avoided social media on Sunday nights because you didn't want to find out from your friends what happened. This was a pulp, you know, a thing that everyone had to watch. And I always enjoyed it because I figured out that after The Talking Dead was on, then the newest episode would play again. This was helpful to me because I had bowling on Sunday nights. I was part of a bowling league that got over sometimes at 9 o'clock, and I'd get home. Rather than me race to get home to catch the last, you know, half of the episode, I would wait until after The Talking Dead, not watch The Talking Dead, of course, because then that would blow the show for me. Wouldn't go on social media, so no one could ruin that for me. And then I'd just watch the newest episode right after that aired, and then I'd be all caught up. So I really liked that aspect of it. They had the, you know, the episode right after, you know, The Talking Dead, so I could catch up on that episode. I loved it. And I still, you know, secretly, I really still do enjoy The Walking Dead. I think it's hard for me to figure out how they can end the show because they've gone so far off from the graphic novel that it's really hard to imagine how they can end the show. They would have to have some type of generic way to end it because the people who are part of the original story arc, some of those people who are part important parts of that aren't there anymore. And there are people who are not part of the series of the graphic novel at all who are still here, who people are really fond of. So where do you go from here? What do you do? So I guess it's a morbid curiosity factor, I guess. But I think if you've ever been a fan of The Walking Dead at all, I think it's important to watch that last episode as a good closure for yourself. Even if you're one of these people who stop watching, and I know there's a lot of people who I talk to who are friends of mine who do not enjoy watching The Walking Dead anymore, and that's their prerogative, and that's something they, you know, don't get, and I get it. You know, it did change a lot. There's a lot of weird, a lot of things that just don't make a lot of sense anymore. You killed off characters people were very fond of, and you have characters who aren't even part of the graphic novel who people are more like a little more. People have outright threatened to not only riot, but not only stop watching, but riot if a certain character is killed off. He's not even in the graphic novel series. You know, the other part is what happens to all these actors and actresses who are part of this show for so long? Where do they go from here? And that's something I'm going to do a little bit more you know, talking about, because we talk about what it's like to be part of a show that's been part of pop culture, but what it's like to grow up on these shows, to be these characters for so long. You know, to this day, I mean, if you see Maureen McCormick, Barry Williams, Mike Lookinland, or any of those people, you might not know them by first name, but I bet you know who Marsha Brady, Bobby Brady, Greg Brady are, because the Brady Bunch is part of pop culture. Everyone knows who the Brady Bunch is, whether you like them or hate them. You know who the Brady Bunch are. You know the characters. You know there's three boys and three girls, the youngest one in curls. So that's something that's part of pop culture, you know, and that's something that people, like, let's face it, a lot of them I just mentioned, the Barrett Williamses and the Maureen McCormicks, the Eve Plums of the world, have said what the struggle's like after a show like that is so iconic, on for so long, that becomes part of your culture for so long. Where do you go from there afterwards? Especially if you're, you know, young, like a Susan Olsen and Mike Lookinland, by the way, that's Cindy and Bobby, for those people who don't know, to then, after they're part of a show for so long, and then after that, what do they do? Because, you know, you're always going to be looked at as Cindy or Bobby Brady. You know, people like, this doesn't just happen to young actors or young actresses. It happens to anyone who's part of a series for so long that this gets part of embedded in your character. How many people to this day can watch a Will Smith movie or when you saw the Oscars this past weekend? How many people remembered the Fresh Prince of Bel Air going up and, you know, coming up from Philadelphia and all that? I bet everyone knows the theme song still. And that, in Will Smith, you know, taken away from the fact that, you know, he did what he did or whatever, and people can look in any way he wants. I personally think that's way too that's just way too much, and it wasn't necessary. I also don't know if I actually believe it was a real thing anyway. To me, coming from the wrestling, it might be the wrestling in me. It might be the fact that I was around a lot of wrestling and I went to wrestling school and I've been watching that for so long. But to me, sometimes everything's a work. A work is a term in wrestling that, you know, is part of the story arc, part of the, you know, the gimmick and what's going to happen next. And to me, the fact that, you know, Will Smith just casually walked up to the stage, no one stopped him, and then slapped Chris Rock, another grown man, and just Chris Rock just sat there, laughed, even put his face out there so Will could slap him. If you watch back, you'll see it. So I don't know if I 100% believe it was all real. Sorry for those people who believe it was. I don't believe it to be real. I think it's a work somehow. Just this stuff here, but I mean, this is something, but Chris Rock's another person, you know him from movies and whatnot. So you really, you know, it's still different when movies versus television. I think you'd have to agree. And if someone has been part of a TV series for so long, like, I mean, how many people know Kenan Thompson, who is still part of SNL? He's still on the cast there. Probably the longest reigning people there is Kenan Thompson. But is that a surprise? Kenan Thompson starred on All That, I believe, or Kenan and Kel before that. He knows television. He's comfortable. Why would he want to move on? It's not like he's getting Hollywood to knock down his doors to be the starring role in the next, to be the next Eddie Murphy. He is, in fact, you know, enjoying the TV style, and why not? But people like, you know, there's a difference between a Kenan Thompson and someone like an Adam Sandler who was there for so long. Well, actually, no, Adam Sandler wasn't there all that long either, if you want to look at it. But then you look at people like a Dana Carvey and a David Spade. By the way, Dana Carvey and David Spade, for my listeners, they have a podcast also called The Fly on the Wall with David Spade and Dana Carvey. Dana Carvey, you guys probably all know as Garth from Wayne's World. I am a fan of SNL. I've always been a fan of comedy in general. I know talent when I see it also. Dana Carvey is by far one of the naturally funniest people and also seems like one of the most genuine human beings on the planet. David Spade has a sarcasm part of him. I got to admit, when I started getting introduced to David Spade, I originally just saw him from his work with Chris Farley, the legendary Chris Farley, who I also really, really enjoyed a lot of his work. But unfortunately, Chris's time was cut short due to the lifestyle that we all live, that they all live and so forth. And unfortunately, that happens, and that's sad. But on this show, you have to honor the people who have paved the way and the people who are responsible for us in general. In David Spade, you know, in the early days, looked like just that sarcastic friend you have along who's always making the wise-ass remark. And to me, David Spade's character a lot of the times that is kind of him. He's on this show, even though I say that, and a lot of people might think that I'm not saying I like David Spade, and it's not the case. I actually do enjoy David Spade because I have a sarcastic sense of humor. So I understand half the time his sense of humor more so than some other people. You know, there's a difference between a Nick Swanson and a David Spade. I've seen a lot of David Spade stand-up routines, hysterical, funny, sarcastic, relatable, again. I think, you know, one of the things I figured that after Chris Farley passed away, I said, well, I think both were still partly still attached to the TV show. I said, well, it's not going to be long that David Spade is going to be on SNL now that Chris isn't here. I think that's not necessarily because I don't think that David Spade can handle it on his own, but I feel like the dynamic between the two, and they were so close, you could see that I think that from his point of view, it must have been painful to be there around the same memories of seeing the same people around, you know, with Chris Farley when he was alive. And I think that can be hard for people. That's probably for the same reason a lot of people on that cast, honestly. Look back at all the legendary people we've lost from SNL, and it almost seems like they happen so quick and so close together. Like, how long before Chris Farley passed did we lose Phil Hartman? And I want to remind people that Hartman was there with Farley and Spade and Sandler. And just the dynamic, and Carvey was there, Michael Myers is there. And also I want to say that if it wasn't for this podcast that I used to start listening to, and again, I'm not afraid to admit that I listen to other podcasts. In fact, I am very overspoken for it. I listen to other people, and I think they're doing great stuff. I talk about and I praise people when they do good things. I also tell people when they're doing things that are wrong or I don't agree with. Today, I'm just giving praise because I think people need to be respected and people need to, you know, give some love to some things they may not be aware of. But David Spade and Chris Farley, greatest duo early days. But Dana Carvey and David Spade on the podcast, it seems like an odd couple because you can't really, you know, unless you listen to it. And I really enjoy it because Dana Carvey seems to add the really the dad element where David Spade has the kind of the singles guy's lifestyle. And I have a lot of respect for both. And David Spade, I think, is just a phenomenal human being as well. I just think that he's one of those people that people misunderstand a lot because they don't get it. But, yeah, go listen to their podcast. It's a fly on the wall with Dana Carvey and David Spade. They've had some amazing guests, including Michael Myers. I mean, think about that one, Nar. I said that to my wife, and she goes, oh, Wayne and Garth were together again. And, you know, what's funny is we live in a society where people talk about other people and they hear something. And Michael Myers, I think, is another one of these people that people have, you know, devoted some type of life, some type of this is how this person is. Listen, I listened to this podcast and I listened to Michael Myers as himself. And not the case, I have to say. I'd have to say he's another one of these people who are getting the kind of the wrong end of the stick. He's known that supposedly he's a diva on set. I don't hear that in him. He's Canadian, which you can also hear. It was actually kind of cool to listen to him. He spoke some French for a little while because, again, French-Canadian. And I thought that was kind of cool to listen to Mike Myers speak French. And the ghost talks about the diverse parts that Mike Myers is. It also shows that how respectful Dana Carvey and David Spade are to, you know, Mike. And they seem to have a lot of their friends on the show, which is cool. I'm waiting for Adam Sandler to come on. That ought to be fun. And I know on the show they've at times kind of poked the bear at Adam a lot. And I'm going to give it, you know, a couple. I'm thinking eventually you're going to have Adam Sandler on there. Just inevitable. Drew Barrymore was on the show recently, and I already have a lot of respect for Drew Barrymore anyway, the original Firestarter herself, and we'll go into that in a second. But go check out their podcast, Fly in the Wall with Dana Carvey and David Spade. It's really good stuff. so there's that. But I also wanted, speaking of Drew Barrymore and the Firestarter, it's time to do a nice film review, I guess. So the Firestarter remake came out. That was a thing on Friday. There are a lot of movies on the list for me of movies I'm excited about. And then there are movies that kind of I heard about. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll check it out. Firestarter for me was a movie that, oh, I'll check it out. And it wasn't something that was immediately on my, I need to see this. I know this is going to be great. And I always treat every single film as its own. I try not to compare a movie that is a remake or a prequel to something else because I feel like that's a disservice to the current product. Going a different, you know, direction that might change some things, and that's not fair to the current product. Let me tell you, so again, I got to look at my elements of what makes a good film, the believability factor. The young lady who played the Firestarter in this series was not Drew Barrymore. However, I do believe, I could be wrong, and I'm going to double check because I don't want to say something that is not accurate. I do believe that this, the girl who played the Firestarter in this movie has already worked with Stephen King or in a Stephen King film, because I do believe she was in the remake of Pet Sematary. But I'm going to double check this right now because I don't want to be wrong and then tell you something that is not accurate. I'm not one of those people. The original one, of course, as you know, was played by Drew Barrymore, who played the role of Charlie. Was it Charlie? I don't remember. So the young lady who played, I guess, the Firestarter in this one, for some reason they only have Alyssa as McGee, but we all know that she was Charlie in the original. But she's played by Ryan Kira Armstrona. I'm going to look this up right now just because I want to make sure, because I'm looking at her, because if I am correct, and I just want to make sure I am, go to IMDb because that's my favorite. Even though I know that not everything on IMDb is accurate, by the way, I want to point that out. I've had people steal my work and post it on IMDb as their own. So that's how I know that not everything on IMDb can be as credited as it can. But for the most part, 9 out of 10, they are pretty spot on. I want to say that. So this young lady who plays the Firestarter, because let's face it, first of all, you have to take away the supporting characters, because we know what this movie is really about. We know who the real star of this film is, right? Okay. The Firestarter is about the character who can portray, who uses mind control to light fires and light things ablaze. That's kind of the original story arc of the character. She is the daughter of two medical experiments, I guess. This I have issues with across the board, that part of it only, just that. And I'm going back into her thing. Oh, of course, she was also in It Chapter 2. Apparently, maybe I'm wrong about the Pet Sematary thing, but she was in It Chapter 2, so maybe that's why I recognize her, because that's a great film as well. I guess I'm wrong. I guess so. Actually, you know what's funny? Isn't that interesting? You know, there's the old element where you kind of stick with the people you know in films, and apparently that's the case here. This young lady does a good job portraying what she is. Ryan Kira Armstrong is her name. And again, she plays the part of Charlie McGee. I called it here. It is Charlie still. And of course, the original was played by Drew Barrymore. I believe this one over Drew, and I'll tell you why. I feel like the Drew is too young to concept what the idea is of the character. I feel like this girl who's a preteen, I feel like that's something I could see. Someone who's kind of having a problem with not only becoming who she is as a person, but she knows there's something different about her, but imagine trying to deal with that as well as trying to deal with puberty, which is something that is touched on in the movie, but not exactly, you know, not deep dived into. So, yeah, she was in art, the art of racing in the dark as well as Zoe. And, you know, that was an underrated movie that no one probably saw. That was a great movie, though. The art of racing in the rain. Again, she was in It Chapter 2 as Victoria Fuller. A couple other horror films. She was in a TV series for a long period of time as Anne. As Anne from Anne of Green Gables, is that what that is? Well, that's impressive. That's a pretty big deal. Wish Upon a Unicorn. I'm sorry I didn't see that. She played young and Antonia in Black Widow. So she's already established in the Marvel Universe. Good for her. She's in American Horror Story in episode 6. Oh, no, in 6 episodes. So she's making her rounds around there as this young lady. And I think she's someone you got to probably watch for. I think she's going to be kind of a big thing. I'm not going to lie to you. Usually I'm pretty good about talented people and knowing who's going to do big things. Taking her aside from the rest of the cast, Zac Efron is her dad in this role, in this movie. And I'm sorry. Unfortunately, I don't buy Zac Efron as a father. I know I'm probably a jerk for saying that. Zac Efron, for me, is going to be, he just seems like a frat guy. He seems like he's the guy from college who's never going to leave from college. And I'm not trying to hate on Zac Efron, but there's certain roles you can buy. I'm a father, and I can act childish at times, as my wife and my kids can also tell you. But I also know when to be serious and whatnot. And I'm not saying that he does this in this movie. And I'm also trying to do this without having to spoil anything, because this movie just came out. You can either go to the theater to watch it, or you can watch it like we did and watch it on Peacock, for those people who have Peacock. You know what? I am happy that we did go and watch it on Peacock rather than the theater. I don't think it would have made a difference on if I'd like it more in the theater versus at home. For me, I probably liked it a little bit more than my wife. My wife didn't like the movie at all because she's used to the original. And whatnot, she wasn't feeling it. She didn't like a lot of, kind of, I can tell somewhat because of the casting, she didn't really like the people in the film. She can't look past that sometimes, and I get that. I have the same thing. If I can't visualize someone in a role, I can't look past it. This movie, I could look past some of them just because I believe part of them. There was a woman who played the mother briefly. In the original movie, you know, the mother wasn't as focused upon in the original Firestarter. This one, she's got more of a story arc to her. There's a lot more family elements to this one than the original. The original seems like it's always her and her father versus the world. This one, we see there was a build to that. Parts of this film I just obviously have issues with. And I wish there was some parts that kind of I got some type of satisfaction with. I'm not a fan of bullying at all of any kind. But when it comes to films, I enjoy, I'm not going to lie, I do enjoy when the bullies get their comeuppance. I think it's important to a film to have that closure for the person who is affected by such things. In this film, you know, she deals with some bullying, and I kind of wish she kind of dealt with that in them, as odd as that may sound. You know, I, of course, you know, you have to look past, when it comes to believability factor, because I remember I'm talking to you how I rate movies and television, believability and story arc, storyline. I'm familiar with the original story of Firestarter. I did read the book. I started to rewatch the original Firestarter. I stopped after half the movie because I had other things to do. I did watch this one in its entirety. And I'm going to tell you why I could actually stop watching the other one. It didn't carry me as this one did. That I can tell you. I didn't believe a lot of the things I was seeing. I couldn't buy a lot of it. It wasn't as clear as what was going on. There were a lot of plot lines missing. I don't like the whiny, cryy kind of things in these things where we obviously know that you're, you know, some type of power or some type of thing. We know that's a thing. So, you know, we know that part of it. I think what was smart is they didn't do a deep dive on how the mother and father became psychic, I guess. I just have issues where there was no explanation of how, why these medical experiments took place to begin with. Yeah, we know they both needed money. What was it for? And also, they met by accident. It wasn't, oh, I loved you all my life. They just met at the event, if you go by the original Firestarter. The new one, you know, we already see them already in the middle of their marriage, and we kind of have the flashback briefly in the beginning of the film of how it came to be. We're immediately introduced to the fact that the girl from birth could light fires, but there's no explanation of why some of those, and I don't know. I guess I believe the new one over the other one. I think the first one was over the top. I think I had a hard time believing that, you know, Elliot from E.T., his younger sister went on to be this pyromaniac who just kills everyone and lights them all on fire. I can't see. I think Drew Barrymore is extremely talented. I'm not taking anything away from her. I love a lot of her work. Firestarter was, you know, one of her younger roles when she was kind of finding her way. I wasn't fond of that portrayal. Sorry. This one, I can believe her over that. I didn't like Zac Efron's fatherhood part of the thing. I felt at times I found myself agreeing with his wife, who, again, has more of a role than the original. The original role, the wife was seen as a flashback rather than a vital part of the movie, which this was. This was like the slow build to how you become where they got. It ended kind of up in the air. Like some things happened that clearly weren't in the original. So, and I'm not going to end a lot of that. And it kind of ends like, wait, what? What is it? I don't think really the ending quite had the left me with kind of like, why did this happen? I don't think that answer got answered. But did I have a feeling going into this movie? Did this movie get some kind of a feeling from me? Yeah, it did several times. I do feel for the girl who's getting bullied and picked on. I felt a great sense of, I guess it's the paternal part of me. I felt badly that these people were judging the poor girl. I felt badly that no one was doing anything to reprimand any of the bullies as far as that. This is not a bullying movie, by the way. I look deeper into movies, and that's kind of what I get from there. I don't like Zac Efron's character here. Sorry. I thought the woman playing the mother did an okay job playing a mother. I think she makes sense. She wanted to train her daughter on how to use these things instead of pushing it down. And I want to point out something a lot of people probably don't know. This is from my human services experience, and this is something that they're touching on in this movie, and it's accurate. And this is probably one of the reasons why I'm not overly fond of Zac Efron. He kept on saying to push down this feeling that she gets. Supposedly the feeling when she can light people on fire, he wants her to suppress this. Push down your feelings, hide it, don't, you know, let it go. And I think anyone who's comes from the mental health world, or anyone who's from the, you know, who knows what it's like to push all your feelings, you know what's going to happen. And that's kind of what this metaphor is. And that's exactly what this metaphor turned out to be. You push down your feelings deep enough and don't deal with them on hand, and you don't kind of, you know, learn to cope with them. Eventually, when you keep on pushing those feelings down, you're going to burst like a volcano. And a lot of people who go through those things, that's what they'll compare it to. And hence you have Firestarter. So there you have it. That's the story arc, and that's kind of without trying to ruin things or whatever else. That's the underlining rule here, and that's the underlying issue is with Zac Efron and his just hide it, don't encourage it thing. Don't agree with it. So that's that. I'm currently
reading Stephen King's newer book. It's not his newest, but his most recent one is later, and I'm really enjoying it.
Next show, I promise you, I'll give you a deep dive on that. I'm really enjoying it, though.
What I do, so I'm talking about some music for a second, because there's some music people I got to chat about. I talked about the Sharp Family Singers, and I've been doing a deep dive on them, and they're—I'm not going to lie to you—they're a little entertaining. I'm not going to lie, and you know, so much so that I saw them doing a singing challenge. Now, I don't know if people know this. I'm a competitive person. I haven't even talked to my wife about this yet, but or anybody else, because I've kind of kept it. I'm kind of going it over in my head. Anyone who knows me, and I've said it so many times, I'm always behind in kind of the pop culture, it kind of social media network thingy. I am not into the whole Snapchat thing, and I'm probably never going to get into that. But I'm not going to lie. I saw people playing games on TikTok. In fact, one of the challenges that the Sharp Family Singers did was something that I could actually almost see myself trying to do with my wife, honestly, who does do TikTok, so she's hipper than I am. I almost contemplated getting into TikTok just to see about these, like the singing challenges, the acting challenges, to see, could I pull off TikTok? So I am currently in the process of kind of debating that with myself if I'm going to add TikTok to something that I'm going to indulge upon. What do you guys think? Should I go to TikTok where I'm competitive and I like to do silly challenges? I don't do stupid challenges, and you're not going to see me do anything that's going to threaten my life or someone else's life. But if it's a singing challenge or a trivia challenge or me, you know, doing imitations or something like that or dancing, oh, don't even worry there. Maybe I might have to get in on that. Maybe Jazz Fitness might have to come back as well for that. Maybe that's a place for Jazz Fitness to return. So that's something that I'm looking at. And so that's that. Go check out the Sharp Family Singers. Tell me what you guys think. Are they the next big thing? Are they the new Partridge Family? We'll see, I guess. Other music people. I have some music people who I'm waiting to hear from. I know that our friend Walker Campbell's waiting to come back on here. I know he's doing a pop culture convention somewhere this very weekend, so that I want to see how that was for him. As you guys know, I am a proud member of the Monster Mania Convention familyhood and working staff and friends with the Hagans for years. So it would be interesting to hear what his experience has been on his end, Walker Campbell being at one of these events where he gets to meet and greet fans and whatnot. I know what it's like for me, and I can tell you it's always interesting learning and meeting other people. For that matter, I saw the Sharp Family Singer. Other people have been at these TikTok conventions. A TikTok convention? There's literally a pop culture convention for pretty much anything you can think of, I guess. You know, I've been prominent on YouTube for a long time. A lot of people consider me being a lot of people have given me the moniker of the YouTube sensation. I see myself as more of like a welcome wagon for YouTube rather than someone who is about competing with other people on YouTube. I think that's stupid when you try to outplay other channels or whatever. I don't think that's smart. I think just accept it and be part of it. And, you know, we're all one big family, I guess. You know, Minty and people like that, the Okay Thank You guys, obviously I have no issues with those guys. I like those guys a lot. I put them over all the time. Brock, speaking of which, I'm going to take a moment to wish our tonight on YouTube, we will be doing our special Spring Fling event on YouTube. Immediately following this, it's going to start going up. And I want to say a quick happy birthday to Brock and Boston, who are going for their United States title match tonight. Brock, I brought them back part of the new series. They're going to be part of the new, well, they are part of the new rave. When I did a survey to ask fans who they wanted to see return to the new show, where I have to rebuild everyone and add them when I had this new software. And Brock and Boston are people that people wanted to see return, as well as the father-son fist bump, Gabe and Austin, who were also part of the show when I started this initiative. And they are also returning tonight as well in a separate match. And we have some great matches on there tonight, so I really think you guys should check it out. But at first, I want to wish happy birthday to Brock and Boston, who are turning 18. Their mom put out a thing. Betsy is her name. What a name. What These people are very entertaining, let me tell you. But Betsy had said what it's like, you know, from a mother's perspective, how she cries, you know, when they were growing up and the stress that they can be and all this. And then she cries about now that they're getting older. I said, oh, boy, does that sound familiar. My wife, to this day, will still cry when it comes to our kids as a pride thing. I am very proud of our kids, and I can relate to her on that end of the emotional roller coaster you can get as a parent. You watch them grow. You watch them get older. You watch them turn into the amazing young men and women they turn into. And I guess in a way, you also have to take some ownership and some pride in that, because you're responsible for helping them get there. So I guess that's something important. But happy 18th birthday to Brock and Boston, the twins. And good luck to them tonight, because remember, we have no control over the outcomes of any of our matches, so whoever wins, wins. Hopefully they can see what they can do. And it's been, I don't know when the last time they tagged up together either, so it'll be interesting, since Boston won the Melee on the relaunching thing we did, where the winner could challenge any champion from any brand. And, of course, he wanted to challenge for the United States title, and he wanted to team up with his brother, making it the United States Tag Team title. So there you go. So happy birthday to them and everyone else who's celebrating birthdays. I know Henry Mina, just of the Mina Boys, they just celebrated a birthday a little long ago too, and I just had him on the show. I feel bad. I didn't wish him a happy birthday. Everyone else whose birthday's coming up, happy birthday to you guys and everyone else. I hope you guys are all doing well and whatnot. As I said, I was supposed to have an actual face-to-face podcast with JoJo the Model Sebastian. I'm hoping to get that done again, and also working on bringing Jackson R. Scott on here officially. He, for the record, he and I did record a Friday episode. It's just some technical difficulties and working on that end of things, but he will be a guest on the show as well. I got confirmation on that, and again, a tremendous young man, and all of our people are amazing. It's always amazing to see these people grow and become the icons that they are meant to be. So there you go. So there you have that. So I've done the shout-outs and the social media stuff. That's fun. I also want to say, you know, my mother's anniversary is going to be coming up soon, where I lost my mother, and Mother's Day was this past Sunday, so hopefully you guys all took care of your mothers. I do want to say that on her day that she passed, I'm probably not going to be on social media. I'm taking a day off from all of social media and everything else to reflect. Probably not going to do much of anything that day, but the day before, maybe we'll do a deep dive and we'll do a little tribute thing talking about my mom and stuff. Also very excited because I just got confirmation that my cousin is actually going to be a guest on this podcast. My cousin is also a character on our show. Shaheen Blue is going to be coming on as a guest, and we're going to be excited to have a family member outside of my wife, my son, and my daughter who have been guests already. This will be my first family member on officially, so that will be interesting. He's into a lot of the acting and the Broadway, and also about, you know, making political views, and very smart, intelligent young man. It's going to be great to have him on the show and have him talk about various different things and what he's been doing and whatnot and, you know, all that fun stuff. And what else? What else can we do? I'm looking at my clock to see how much is left of this episode. You know, I do want to kind of take a step back for a second. I know I give a lot of praise to a lot of people and stuff like that, and they all deserve it. But I also wanted to kind of say something officially on the air about something that happened. And it kind of All right, so let's put it like this. I don't candy coat things on this show. I say it how it is, right? When I give someone pointers or I say something to someone on social media, it's honestly to help other people. It's honestly to inspire others to do what they got to do and to achieve their goals and dreams, whatever they may be. And I have been all over entertainment. I've been in the pro wrestling business for many years. I worked in film. I worked on stage. I worked behind the scenes. I've been a writer. I've held multiple jobs in various different roles, everything from retail to sales to, you know, bouncer, martial art instructor. I've done martial arts. I've done boxing. I've done soccer, a.k.a. football. I've done swimming. I've obviously done a lot in my life. And I had a person one time I had, you know, offered pearls of wisdom. And a couple things here. One, I know a lot of people who go on social media feel the need to ask the rest of social media how they could do various different things in their life. I've seen people, hey, how's my outfit look? You know, that's your thing. That's your thing. Me personally, you know, I dress how I want to dress. I don't need someone to tell me how I look because in the end, it's up to me. Do I think I look good? And that's what's important. Now, I personally have when I go out in public, I do have a thing where I have to, you know, I got to be showered, clean, shaved, you name it. You know, I got to look good for myself. That's me myself. Hygiene needs to be spot on, teeth brushed, eyes on, sunglasses on, all that stuff. That's myself. And if anyone has issues with the clothes I wear, how I cut my hair, that's on them. That's not on me if they have issue with how I dress. I didn't ask them how they like my, you know, T-shirt or how I like my jeans. They're not the one buying it for me. I bought my clothes. So this is kind of touching on the subject where people put – I had Lana King on my show a couple nights ago, and we talked a little bit about the effect other people have on social media and how many people use social media as their lifeline. This is their all, end all, be all. I want to remind you guys that social media, as fun as it can be destructive and can be intrusive. And the more you get into it, the more demanding it can become. And the more demanding it can become, it becomes less fun and more work. So that being said, I mean, I've written songs for people. I've sung various things. I've done talent shows where I've performed as a singer. I've written lyrics for songs that have won songwriting competitions that have been heard before. I have family who are into the film and the music business. So I have a lot of experience in various different things. And I had a person, you know, I had said to someone, just be careful. You know, they said how, you know, they're looking for something to put up. And, you know, they were apologizing because they were having a vacation because they needed time off. What I said was, it's good you're taking some time off. Don't feel like it's your work. Do things on your time for what you want to do for you. Don't do it for everyone else's sake. If you want to put out a song, put out a song. If you want to take some time off and hang out, then do that. Be you, is what I said. I don't know how you get confused by this statement. I got a message, very angry message from the person's whatever they are to be. And the moral of the story is the way they ended the thing was they said that, well, what I had told them is, listen, I was looking out for the best interest of, you know, your person because, you know, I have friends who have done the music thing. I've talked about this on the show. I also have friends who've been in the acting thing. I've done movies. I've casted people in roles. I've also, the other thing, I just wrote a stage play for the first time, and next year I plan on putting it out there. But that's beside the point. The moral of the story is this. I've seen a lot of this, and a lot of people seem to think this person basically decided the way I took it was that they were trying to say that I don't know what I'm talking about. And then they went on to tell me that my opinion didn't matter and that these other people's opinion who supposedly were in entertainment, were in entertainment and they know more. And I told the person, I am in entertainment, actually, and I told her why and how. And I did take some offense to that statement because I have been in entertainment. I've done multiple things. And I had a similar conversation with someone. And they weren't trying to be rude, these other people, but they are used to seeing the wrestling stuff that I've done. Everyone's familiar with the YouTube show where I put the wrestling shows together. But what you don't know is I've done other things as well. I've done other things on YouTube where I was a YouTube sensation. I was wrestling. And I've done that myself, not the computer cartoon wrestling, game stuff. I did the actual thing. I cut promos. I've done anti-bullying messages. I've done skits. I've done a lot of the early stuff a lot of YouTuber people have. And I'm friends with a lot of those early YouTubers. And I still am with most of them. Some people, as time goes on, you move, people go in their own realms. A friend of mine, a very loyal friend of mine, an F4L from Australia, in fact, was huge on one of the early YouTube singing guys, right? One of the first early YouTube singers when I was really starting out being Jazz Fitness really starting that out. So YouTube had already started at that point. By that point, I've already been a wrestler for multiple years before YouTube was a thing. And I've already been doing other things prior to YouTube even existing. But when Jazz Fitness's character started, YouTube was really becoming a thing. And this is when this person was starting out on YouTube. This is also around the time MySpace was a thing. Remember MySpace? Yeah. Well, this is how it started, and I became friendly with a lot of the early people on there. And I still am loyal to those people, and they're still loyal to us and me and whatnot. And this person was – I'm not going to say his name because why would I have to dignify who it is? I just tell you that it was – he is still out there. He was all over YouTube. And he was singing a lot of these covers like a lot of other people. Very talented young man. Did a lot of Broadway stuff. We had a lot of great conversations, he and I. We still have here and there have conversations. He went from one social platform to another social media platform to another social media platform, trying to gain views, trying to gain popularity. And what ended up happening is the fan base got ravenous. And the fan base started becoming like demanding of, hey, when you're going to put out a video? Put out a video right now. And he'd have all this pressure on him to put out a video, to put out a cover of a song and how to cut, how this. And people would comment, this is the sober bullying thing. And it's also what we call trolls or keyboard warriors. We have multiple names for them in my line of work. But the moral of the story is people love to hate on others. And fans, even when they like someone, they can be so demanding of the person that it takes the fun away from it. Myself, I used to be on YouTube a lot, and I cut back quite a bit because I have other things I can do and other things that I do. But there are a lot of people who think that YouTube is the thing and social media is where you are the mecca. And I'm going to tell you that's not the case. You build yourself on your own worth, and I think it's important to realize that once you become part of the public eye, you really have to be ready for that at all costs. And I say this because there are people this has happened to in film and in movies and music and everything else where you have so much passion for something, people get so ravenous to see what you're going to do next, and it's so demanding, it takes the fun out of it. You get burnt out. And to this day, he hasn't posted a music video or anything else on social media in quite a few years. His videos are still up there. That's just one example, but I know this happened with multiple people. And then there's also the people who want to be big famous movie stars, right? Okay, cool. But I want to let you guys know what happens on the opposite end of that. And I'm hoping to bring someone on the show soon that it can actually explain a little bit more. You guys remember I had my good friend Christian Goodwin on the show, and as I explained, as we had him on the show, he talked about how he started out in film. He really wanted to do the acting thing. That's how I met him, through casting, and I cast him in one, I recommended him in one movie, cast him in another movie, and I was going to have him in my own movie, and he was doing all kinds of great roles and everything else, and then he got burnt out. He found out, you know, I want to spend time with my friends. And he can't do that because he's always working. And then got demanding. And then, you know, he wanted to play hockey. He couldn't play hockey and be an actor at the same time. And then when hockey fell through, he went into music. Now he's doing, you know, music, and he's trying to find his own way or whatever else. And good for him. But that's kind of the example. And that's kind of what I'm trying to tell people about. It's kind of everyone wants to be famous until you are. Everyone thinks they want what it is that you think you want. And I want to bring some names up to you people. I'm not trying to discard you. If this is something you guys truly want, I think you owe it to yourself to really know and accept what is coming. If in fact you do. If you become the next big Hollywood blockbuster actor, I want to let you know what that looks like for you. Especially if you're young or whatever old you are. No, how old you are, it's demanding. If you are the top-notch person, it's going to be demanding. Number one, there is no more you time anywhere. Now, when you go out, there's no more asking social media, how do I look on social media? Because now you're on Hollywood Insider, or now you're on TMZ. Or you're on whatever the tabloid is, that's where your picture goes up and they say, look how this guy's dressed. That's what happens. Your privacy is out the window. You want to have a dinner with your friends? Nope, no such thing. Now you have dinner with your friends, you better get ready to have it either in your own home, away from everyone else, or if you go out to a big restaurant, you better get ready for 900 people to come up to you and ask you for your autograph, your picture, while your buddies are all sitting there waiting for you, or your family. I know a lot of you guys probably think, well, wait a minute now. Certainly there's some good things here, and of course there is. There's a lot of money involved. You get paid very well for big roles. But there's a cost for that money on the roles, in the roles you do. And to be fair, there are a lot of talented people who I've had the luxury of, you know, I've recommended a lot of people for certain projects and so forth that they got, and I'm very proud of them, that they got big things. I want to talk, the biggest example modern time that I can talk about is the kids from Stranger Things. A lot of people, you know, have all kinds of things to say on social media about how they just want to be themselves. They just want to be, you know, if they work, they work. But let them have their privacy when they have their privacy. When they're not on set, when they're not doing some public-sized thing, let them be them. Guess what? You don't have that luxury anymore. Finn Wolfhard, who is a very talented young man, you know, he's been in both It movies. He's been in multiple other roles. He's been in Ghostbusters Afterlife just recently. He was on Stranger Things. He's still on Stranger Things. It's just wrapping up this year. I want you to listen to the stories he tells. He's a modern day human being. Remember, and we're talking about a kid who's, what is he, just turning 18 or something now? But the whole time he was on Stranger Things, he can tell you stories of him being 14, 15 years old, having strangers, fans, following him to his house, going into his garage, hiding for him. I want you guys to think about that when you want to be Hollywood blockbusting stars. Is this something you guys truly want? Is this something you're ready for? That element of stardom. And then you look at cases where the bigger we are, the more, you know, out there you have to be, the more roles you have to be, the more demanding you are. And then what happens when you get older? You become less important. You become less roles because you get older and you, you know, get overpassed by the next thing. Ask what happened to Macaulay Culkin. Macaulay Culkin, one of the hottest actors at one point, I'm talking about as far as being popular and being booked anywhere. Did he enjoy it? No, probably not, because he... The reason Macaulay Culkin was doing a lot of the roles he did is because he was pushed into it. He didn't have a say in the matter. Ask him. Listen to him. People love to look at people like him and point the finger and say, oh, this kid's wild. You're only as wild as people portray you to be. If you grew up in the lifestyle and what that these poor people went through, then you would understand. I think Macaulay Culkin is one of the biggest role models of all time. And this is someone who at one point, everyone would think, oh, he's strange. He's out there. He's, you know, if you listen to him, really listen to him. Don't listen to what everyone else tells you about him. Listen to him directly. He's not huge into the, oh, he's doing drugs. He's always on drugs. He smokes marijuana once in a blue moon for dealing with stress or whatever. And a lot of people do that these days, and it's also very much legal most places now. But outside of that, he's himself. He's low-key. He's been pushed into almost all the young roles he's had. He's had to overcome his own family. There's a cost for these things, people. When I was younger, fun fact, this is the difference between people like me who meet these people and people like everyone else, okay? When I go to, you know, be in the same place as a lot of these people who are kind of Culkin and agree, I met Macaulay Culkin along with the rest of the cast of Robot Chicken. Culkin works on Robot Chicken once in a while. And I told this story before, and this has been a little bit, but I'm going to tell it again because I think it's important. A lot of people will go crazy over, you know, him being him, and they'll go crazy. Oh, it's, you know, Kevin McAllister, and it's his role in that movie and this movie. I look at a human being when I look at these people. I look at who the person is directly. And this goes back to, you know, being someone who treats everyone the same way as I treat others. This goes back to wrestling training when I was taught by my trainer, Killer Kowalski, not to mark out to other wrestlers in the locker room because you're all the same cloth. You're all the same entity. You're all the same thing. Good to show them respect, but they're the same as you. Don't be asking for pictures and autographs and all these other things. They're equal to you. Show them respect and there you go. So out of respect for that, when I meet these people, I thank them for whatever they're going to do that is important to me. And I thank Macaulay Culkin when I got to meet him. Now, when I met the cast of Robot Chicken, it was Seth Green and the amazing cast he had along. His wife is on the cast as well. Seth Green is an amazing human being. What a nice guy. We talked for a while about, you know, a lot of people talk about him from Robot Chicken or Family Guy, and they're talking about him from, you know, Austin Powers. I was talking to him about his first role working as It. And we talked about the effects on the various people from the movie he worked with. We talked about John, the late, great Jonathan Brandes, as he was also in the movie with Seth Green. This is the things that I talk to people about, the impacts that they have on me, influencing me. And, you know, I was a filmmaker myself and things of that nature, so it's not something something that I obviously know a lot about. Is the filmmaking process and other pressures and so forth. As I was leaving the little, the gathering we had, Macaulay Culkin was walking in. And, I said, hey, I got to go and I got to do some things, but I wanted to say thank you because, a lot of people will probably sit there and I watched it myself. He walked in, a lot of people, oh, Macaulay Culkin, it's Kevin and whatever. And I just said, listen, I just want to say thank you because if it wasn't for you, you know, showing me that a kid can actually be on his own and can fight for himself and all that, I wouldn't have the courage to divorce my own family. And I've talked about this on my show. I was at the time 15 when I started the process to separate from my stepfamily who had legal custody of me. It was a toxic environment. They were very abusive, emotionally, verbally, socially, just destructive people. They cost me a lot, and I've talked about that before, which I won't go deep into now because there's not a lot of time left. But I thanked Macaulay Culkin because he divorced his parents, not divorced his parents, but he basically fired his dad and mom and became his own guardian at a young age. He said, I'm not living with you anymore. I'm not doing anything for you anymore. I'm going to be my own person. That's why I thanked him, because I know what that's like to have a destructive and a, you know, a family toxic life like that with this kind of people. And he actually gave me that, you know, influence that I could do that. And I did, like him. Of course, you know, a lot of difference in, you know, money and power and whatnot, but it was the same result. He showed me that, yes, I can do that, and he proved that he could do that. And when I separated, he was actually one of the people I gave an example of someone who's successfully been able to prove that they can survive on their own. And I did, and I still have. So I thanked him for that. And that's the difference between me and most people. People see these people as whatever their role is. I see them as human beings and what they do in vengeful. I know talent, of course. I'm not afraid to say I know what talent is as well. But I also know the talent that is forced. I know the talent that is just there, right? And I know that that's just how it works. Some people want to be there, and there's some people who just don't. And I get that, and I've seen it myself on my own sets. So needless to say, you know, I thought about this, and I said, well, you know, I like to, you know, highlight people on my show for when I, you know, am very supportive of people who go after their goals and dreams like I did and achieve them like I did. But I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? And I do have an open door policy on the show. I'm open to have whoever on this show to discuss whatever it is to help them get to them to that level, if that's going to help them. To give them some tools, some knowledge they might not have, or to, you know, praise them for what they do. Like if Gabe and Austin are listening, the father-son fist bump, I would more than welcome a collaboration with you guys. I would love to have you guys on this show to talk about the dynamic you guys have as you guys do what you guys do, and I do what I did my son years ago when we started the whole YouTube thing. And that's now, you know, as he gets older or whatever. And I think there's a lot of stuff there would be fun. And there's a lot of other, like Jack and Tim, the lucky ones, doing phenomenal work and things like that. So these are the people I praise and I thank them. And also they're respectful enough to acknowledge the fact they understand that. And then, of course, Walker Campbell and JoJo, Sebastian, all these people who have been on this show before, who have been respectful, and it's been a joy to work with these people and the people who, you know, support them. Both individuals, their mom's doing an amazing job taking care of them and helping them out. But in the same sense, it doesn't matter who it is, as much respect as I have for someone. If someone is rude to me, no matter who it is, I'm going to hold them accountable for that. And unfortunately, that also reflects on the people in which who are advocating, quote, for these people. I spoke very highly of certain people on this show, and I can't honestly, in as much as respectful as they are, you know, sometimes the fact that the person who tried to basically tell me that my worth in the entertainment business is nothing and that there are people who know more than I do when she doesn't know anything I've done is not only disrespectful, but also undermines me and what I can do. And also shows me that there's no mutual respect there. So that's how I take that. And unfortunately, because of her interaction with me, I am probably not going to be opening that door or inviting that person on the show because I don't reward being disrespected by anyone either. Sorry, I'm human. And also, I am about respect. And if I'm disrespected, why would I have someone who's disrespectful on my show? And I want to say the person, you know, who they're supposedly helping, you know, they are have not been disrespectful and they have been very kind. But
I am not going to be disrespected by anyone. Sorry. And they probably know who they are, so I'm not going to mention who they are. The person themselves, the person directly, who is, you know, someone who I've praised in the past and who I have supported, I am not going to lie to you. I kind of find it hard to continue to support when, if I say something to be helpful, it's somehow turned into being negative, is, you know, just treated that way. And I never mean it. I'm never disrespectful. I say things how they are, and I, you know, you do something good, I say good. And that phrase I said at the beginning of this, where they said they were taking some time off because they were burnt out and they'll try to get something out for people, I just say, hey, take your time. Put it out when you feel like it. Don't do it because you feel you have to. Do it because you want to. And that's when this person decided to tell me that my long-winded sentences, because apparently that's a long-winded sentence, and whatnot is very, wasn't being able to told. It was being disrespectful. I don't know how that is. As I explained to them that I've had friends of mine who have done this, you know, music thing, and I explained what happens and whatnot, and the person then continued to tell me that I don't know, that they are only concerned with talking about people who are in the entertainment business, which I am also in the entertainment business, but that was when I realized that this woman is clearly not listening to what I'm telling her. So that's the story there. But that's not to worry. So that person's not on the show, and that's the reason why I'm not inviting that person. That's probably why I'm eventually going to sadly unfollow them. I'm not going to be fake ever who I am. And as much as I am, you know, I think the young man is very talented and whatever. funny enough, he did a cover of a song that I wrote for my cousin recently. So I thought that was funny. Someone who says I don't know much about entertainment. He's got the right people. But I guess they didn't know that I wrote that song for my cousin. But I don't mind. It's cool. Because I remember I wrote lyrics. I didn't write the song itself, and my cousin did all the singing. So there's that. But, you know, I guess I know a few things about entertainment since you use one of my songs to cover. So I hope you like the lyrics because that's what I'm about. That's the last thing I'm going to say about that. And, yeah. Anyway, folks, I'm always notorious at the last minute to – you know, rush through and tell everyone how to get a hold of me and whatnot. And other things. Want to say, one, I'm going to check the score. Hopefully, I know that game 7 of the NBA Finals is still going on. I don't know. I haven't really looked today to see what's going on with that. I know that a lot of teams are involved there. I know the Celtics and the Bucks. The Suns and Memphis, I believe it is. Golden State and the 70s, the Heat, I think it is. Could be wrong, sorry. Hawks, maybe. I know a lot of people are looking at the Suns and the Bucks to be in the finals. I don't necessarily think that you should – I'm going to say it again. I don't think you guys should undercut Golden State Warriors. I think they're a team you guys should worry about. But we'll see. I'm a sports guy. I like sports and I like fun things. I just know that sports are a little different than a lot of other things. I also know that Golden State Warriors win a long time undefeated, winning the championships. They win a couple years in a drought and now they're in the finals and most of their other games they've dominated this season. And in this playoff series, they've dominated most of those. And that's why I say I think it's a little bit and of course I haven't looked yet either. I might be eating my own words right now, but if the Golden State Warriors aren't in the semifinals, one of the last teams in there, I would be surprised. If I was to guess, I would say the Suns are going to be playing the Golden State Warriors. And I'm going to tell you this too: if the Golden State Warriors beat the Suns, I'm going to say that the Golden State Warriors are probably going to win the championship because if this, I could be wrong again, you know, what do I know except for everything? I'm kidding. But that would be my prediction. And it's not to take a dive on anyone or anything. It's just because I look at statistics, I look at numbers, I look at performance. Celtics, I've seen the Celtics live a couple times this year. They're really good. And I also look at the statistics of the playoffs right now. And I can tell you that any games on the West Coast, on the opposite side, of course, for those people who don't know about American basketball, I got to be quick because I know I'm running out of time. But just the overview is there's the East and there's the West, and that's how the conferences go. In the East, the final teams you got to worry about, you have the Golden State, you have the Bucks, and then you have the Celtics, and then you have two other teams on opposite ends. I want to say Golden State and – is it Golden State and – no, that doesn't make sense. Anyway, the Bucks and the Celtics, game seven, is their last game is tonight. I don't know what's going to happen there. I haven't looked yet. I'm going to look in this minute. Next show I come in, I'll be coming on here, and I can tell you that. And the Golden State Warriors, I don't know what that's doing right now. I know the Suns were in the series, and that was kind of dead even for a while. The Suns and the – I want to say the Memphis team – I think Golden State's playing the Hawks, and I don't know what that's doing either. But I can tell you right now, if Golden State gets through to the next round, if the Golden State defeats the Suns, it doesn't matter if it's the Bucks or the Celtics who are in the finals, which I believe is going to be one of those two teams, based upon performance, based upon what I've seen. I'm going to say that if the Golden State Warriors go to the finals, then the Golden State Warriors are going to win the entire NBA championship this year. And that's not to say that I'm a Golden State Warriors fan. I'm just a realist, and I'm just honest. I like the Bulls. The Bulls lost to the Bucks, so my son got out with that. I have a lot of respect for the Celtics, but if the Bucks beat the Celtics, then obviously they can – they're East, that's it. But, yeah, I think that's something that – we should look at right there. So there you go. That's my predictions for those people who have asked who didn't ask. Anyway, I'm going to tell you right now, if you want to get a hold of me, you want to be a guest on this show, reach out to me by email at wow, W-O-W, Dream Matches, DREIMMATCHES at gmail.com. You can reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram at F4L Icon, SEANJAZZSTEVENS. That is on one. That's on Instagram. That's the letter one. I mean, the number one, not the letter. And on Twitter for the moment, it's SEANJAZZSTEVENS by itself. And again, I'm probably going to be leaving Twitter eventually soon as well. If I have a TikTok, we'll talk about that next time, and I'll give you that. We'll see. I highly doubt that. Of course, on Dream Matches, or Icons of the F4L on YouTube under Icons of the F4L on YouTube. Thank you very much. And to everyone else out there, may all your dreams come true, and I hope you guys are all great. All your dreams come true. Peace from the F4L headquarters.